Well, good afternoon, everyone.
Afternoon.
It's Tuesday, April 6th, and we are going to call to order a public hearing. Tompkins County Legislature, I'll read it, is holding a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. concerning proposed law B of 2021, a local law amending Chapter 80 of the County Code and repealing Article 30.04 of the county charter to allow for the merging of the Stop DWI and Traffic Safety Committees. Is there anyone here to speak to the legislature, to speak to this public hearing? No one? All right. I will declare this public hearing as closed and call to order the Tuesday, April 6, 2021 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you all please join me in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Dave McKenna. Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Coming in.
Leslie Scheel.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Martha Robertson. Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Present.
We have 13 members present.
All right, thank you very much. Presentation, proclamations, communications, and notices. You would have received any communications and notices. Today I have a proclamation which I will read, and I'm happy to read. Whereas emergencies can occur at any time that require police, fire, or emergency medical services, and whereas when an emergency occurs, the prompt response of police officers, firefighters, and paramedics is critical to the protection of life and preservation of property. And whereas the safety of our police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics is dependent upon quality and accuracy of information obtained from citizens who dial 911 and the Tompkins County Emergency Communications Center. And whereas public safety telecommunicators are the first responders and most critical contact our residents have with emergency services. And whereas public safety telecommunicators are the single vital link for our police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics by monitoring their activities by radio, providing them information, and ensuring their safety. And whereas public safety telecommunicators of the Tompkins County Department of Emergency Response have contributed substantially to the apprehension of criminals, suppression of fires, and treatment of patients. And whereas each 911 dispatcher has exhibited compassion, understanding, and professionalism during the performance of his or her job in the past year of unprecedented challenges resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic, now therefore I, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim April 11th through the 17th, 2021, as Public Safety Telecommunicators Week in Tompkins County in honor of the men and women whose diligence and professionalism keep our county and its citizens safe. Signed the 6th day of April, 2021. Yay. Thank you. And I see John and I see Jessica. Are you here to receive this proclamation?
Yes, ma'am.
And would either of you like to say a few words?
I just want to say thank you for taking the time to recognize our dispatchers. This has been kind of a challenging year, and they've done an excellent job. So thank you for recognizing that.
Thank you, Jessica. John is nodding in agreement.
Indeed, I echo Jessica's comments, and thank you all for taking the time to acknowledge our personnel. It's been a very challenging year, but they have risen to the occasion, and I'm glad to see them gain the recognition they deserve. So thank you.
Thank you to all their dispatchers for the excellent work they continue to do, and like you said, John, for rising to the occasion, to the challenge in this unprecedented past year and continuing that we have been experiencing. Thank you all for your leadership as well. I don't have any information about an executive session this evening. And do I have any staff here for whom I need to reorder anything on the agenda? I don't see.
The consent agenda, maybe there are a lot of staff and guests here.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go on to privilege of the floor for the public. Is there anybody from the public who wanted to speak with us or any correspondence that came in via email? Everybody's out enjoying the nice weather. All right, I'm going to roll because we're going to get out of here and enjoy the nice weather, too. Municipal officials, I did see George McGonigal. Where did he go?
Top corner.
Oh, top right now. Hello, George. Welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Afternoon.
Good to see you all. I'd like to start my comment with a true story. Yesterday, I decided it was time to register my trailer with the state of New York. And I thought the local DMV was closed, so I entered the ominous world of trying to reach Albany to do this. And after about 20 minutes of getting nowhere, it occurred to me that people in Albany were just messing with me, and they were probably laughing while I was trying to do it. And they told me that at the earliest it would be a 40-minute wait on the phone. So I did what everybody in the city of Ithaca does when they're frustrated. I called Henry Granison. And Henry called Maureen, our county clerk. And in about the same amount of time that I would have waited on the phone, I went down to the DMV and registered my trailer and walked out and lived happily ever after. So I want to thank Maureen. We have the best county clerk in the state. We have the best DMV staff in the state. And South Hill and East Hill has the best county legislature that I know of, except for the rest of you, of course.
Wow. All right, George, you're muted.
So thank you. That was a good day. As for business at the city, you may know that we've been looking at police reimagining for the last month and a half or so. The resolutions we came up with, which are pretty close to the ones you came up with, except for the first one, we passed unanimously last week on the last day of March. Of course, it's early days to see how this reimagining plays out, but we passed it unanimously, and we're moving ahead. And for their part, the police officers of the city of Ithaca really took these changes seriously, and I'm optimistic that we will end up with something that's better than what we have now. I don't know what that is though yet. I do have one favor to ask of all of you. I would appreciate it that from now on we refer to the mobile command vehicle as the mobile command vehicle, or T99, and that calling it the SWAT truck is a thing of the past. We're actually glad that it's staying in the city. We think it's a useful tool, and it will be reimagined like everything else and used by several departments in the city and throughout the county. It's still accessible to the county and the Tompkins County Sheriff. As for tomorrow night's agenda, it's a fairly light agenda. We're voting on a bond to move the new GAC gym a little closer to completion. That bond will be paid back by GAC Incorporated, the private side of GAC, so it won't cost the city taxpayers anything in the long run. We are voting to allocate some coronavirus money we got from the federal government through the IURA. A large portion of that, approximately $250,000, a little bit more, will go to GAC for youth programming, and I think $65,000 will go to the community outreach worker, an additional community outreach worker, to help with homeless issues, etc. I think that's all I've got.
Thank you very much, George. And now everybody knows Paul Henry. Add it, Henry. We'll get you a bumper sticker. Questions for George. Go across my screen, Deb Dawson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And thank you, George. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Has the city already received this money, or is this allocation to GAC just prospective?
The money they're getting through the IURA from...
Oh, the money came through IURA?
Yes.
I just want to be sure that it wasn't the stimulus money, the ARP money, rather.
It's CDBGCV2 funding.
Okay.
I don't know what those letters stand for, but that's what it is.
All right. Thanks, George. Yep.
Not sure why Deborah wants to make sure it's not the ARP money, because I'm coming after that, too.
Well, yeah, but I was feeling bad because they might have gotten theirs first.
Amanda.
Yeah, thanks. And if Henry's the best legislator, then maybe I should ask him this. But George, thanks for being here. You've probably seen on the West Hill listserv, people are getting a little worked up about the construction down at the bottom of Elm Street on West Hill. And I know that's not a city project, but have people come to you? Like, for those who don't drive on that road, there's a huge construction housing project rebuilding one of the houses there. And often the whole road is taken up by vehicles and trucks and people coming and going. And I don't know if you have an answer for folks, or if people have approached you about that.
Yeah, people have. It's Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Project. The road is extremely narrow, and in order to do this work, they have to park there, and sometimes there's a crane there. I think that the best solution, to be honest with you, is for people coming down Elm Street to just turn left on Chestnut Street and then come down Sunrise and avoid it altogether.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. And for pedestrians, which is also kind of tricky, there's a sidewalk that goes right down through the center of the LACS property. And you can avoid it. You can avoid the construction that way as well. So that would be my advice, is to just go around it. Don't even try to do it.
All right. Well, that's what I'll tell people when they ask me. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Martha.
Thank you, Leslie. And thank you, George. Good news about the community outreach worker. Are you saying, so this is another one the city would pay fully for the third person? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that because I don't know, but we're going to vote on $65,000 for that program. And I think that's about the cost of one position, I believe.
And so would that, is the intention then ongoing, since that's a staff position? Is that the idea, do you know?
I can't say.
Okay.
I don't, because right. I don't know.
Okay, and that vote is tomorrow?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, and thanks very much.
Martha, I'll say a little bit about what I know about it, and I can speak from the GIEC end, is that for, you know, those of us who, for those programs that are a 2021 budget, would have seen a little bit of a deficit because of COVID-19 shortfalls in the city. There was some CDBG funds that could help plug those holes. And so that's where the monies are going. So it's not a new position. It's just to support what's already there.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for the clarification.
Henry.
Yes, thank you for the kind words, George. I'd also like to know, do you know, has Savante talked about the task force yet that he's going to be naming to look at the look at the new public safety department?
He has not.
No.
Okay. And when do they have to report back?
I think it should be about before the end of the year.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
And I misspoke earlier. What I meant to say was that Henry is among the best legislators.
Nice save, George. Nice save. I don't know how many text messages you got already, but nice save. Any other questions for George? Nope. All right. Thank you, George, as always. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I don't see any other municipal officials. All right. All right. Let's move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Rapid response, legislators. Here we go. Who's up? Oh, nobody wants to say anything. Martha.
Yeah, just a quick report on the state budget, which is, for the first time since Governor Cuomo has been governor, is not on time, and it's still not done. We're trying to get kind of real-time updates. And it looks really dicey about whether our priorities are included in the budget, even though the state Senate and assembly in their one house bills included paying back the 5% withholding, included repaying the sales tax diversions from AIM and hospital fund and most of our other priorities. The last we heard, those priorities were not included in the deal. It's not done yet, but it's kind of well, it's very discouraging. So we hope to hear more from NYSEC soon, and we're lining up somebody from NYSEC to come to Tiger next week. But we should hear something, I hope, before then. So nothing doesn't look good right now.
Thanks, Martha. Ann Corman, then Mike Sickler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also wanted to thank the dispatchers. It's often from people that I've known that work there. It's a very challenging and stressful job, but hopefully rewarding. And, you know, it's the first people that someone in crisis talks to, and they often have to triage and help figure out what needs to be done next and help the person through that. I've had to call myself the last couple of years 911 a couple of times, so I really appreciate the help that I was given. And I wanted to welcome our new legislator, Leslie Schill. So I look forward to talking with you later this week, but I wanted to welcome you to the legislature. And George, if he's still on here, I wanted to say I am from Albany, and I will try not to laugh at you or mess with you for at least a week or two. And I do want to say that, yes, the DMV has been open for the most part, even when they had to just have people just put things in a secure box. But yes, our DMV is open, and it is the best in the state, even better than Albany's, I would say. And if you use our local DMV, you help keep your money local. So I really encourage people to use. And if you don't want to go in person, you can mail your anything that you have to go to the DMV. You can mail that with the local address, and we'll also get some of that local money or that money local to use. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that we have 100, I know this might be talked about later, but we're down to only 113 active cases of COVID, and I'm glad to see that. I hope we don't have another rise because of the recent holiday weekend. And as far as vaccinations, I'm very happy to see that we have 30, in New York State, we have 34% of people that have their first vaccination already. So that's 34%. But in Tompkins County, we have 45% of people that have had their first vaccination. So way to go, Tompkins County. It's not time yet to relax on this. We're in the home stretch. So keep doing what we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Mike Sickler.
Hey, I just wanted to send out my congratulations to Kyle Dake. Kyle Dake, over the weekend, he beat James Burrow in the 74-kilogram wrestling, freestyle wrestling. James Burrow is, if you don't know a little bit about him, he's, if not the best wrestler in that weight class, or is one of the best in the last decade.
10 times.
A lot of people say he's the best. So for Kyle to be able to beat him was remarkable. It was an exciting 6 minutes. And he had to beat him twice. So it was just fantastic. And just to give you a little background on James Burrows, hadn't been shut out in a wrestling match in 206 matches. And Kyle was able to shut him out in the first match. And then he was able to take the second match. And he'll be going to Tokyo. So Lansing's own Kyle Dake, I want to congratulate him and his family. Obviously a lot of sacrifice to get there. And also, obviously, Cornell wrestler. So a lot of local connections there for Kyle. So congratulations to Kyle and his family.
Thank you, Mike. I'll take that one off of my chair's report. But, yes, indeed, that was exciting to watch. In 10 years, no one has James Burrows has carried the championship. 10 years, and it took Kyle Dake and that awesome, awesome wrestling strategy. So Jared's arrested, I'm sorry, so I'm forced to watch it. Martha.
Yeah, thanks for letting me to remember a couple of things. I won't say anything about March Madness. I know that must be on your report, Leslie. exciting games. I want to say this part during the beginning when more people might be listening than later. The American Rescue Plan, the bill that the law that was passed just a couple weeks ago, has, of course, we've been talking a lot about the state and local money, which is really important to that community. There's also a lot of other kinds of money in there. There's money for housing and nutritional assistance and just a lot of different things. And I really encourage, I know municipalities all are getting some money as well, but nonprofits and businesses, people should take a look at what's in there. There's an 18-page list on the NACO website. So that's NACO.org. Anybody listening should just go take a look, because it'll be important for us to really optimize what our community as a whole can realize out of the American Rescue Plan. And the American Jobs Plan, the bill that is in the works now, the so-called infrastructure bill, has even more different kinds of pots of money that, as we learn about it, people should pay attention and get their proposals ready. So NACO has information on both of those things, NACO.org. And add my congratulations to Leslie Schill and welcome back as a former county employee and planning department expert. It's great to welcome a familiar face back to the legislature and have 14 of us here tonight. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Martha. Leslie.
So thank you, everyone. I really appreciate the warm welcome from the legislature. I just wanted to say thank you to District 2. During COVID, cold, dark months, I would say our community did an amazing job coming out to the polls. Almost 600 people voted, a really close election, amazingly interesting, got a lot of people talking. And we have so many more elections to come this season. So I think that there's, you know, interest, and we're trying to spark that for the rest of the legislators that are moving through primaries and into the November election. Looking forward to that. I'm really excited to get started. And I just wanted to say thank you so much to county staff who made swearing in at 5 o'clock today a possibility for me so that I could also attend the first meeting. And I'm really excited, and I'm hopeful to work with all of the other legislators and hear from both District 2 constituents, but also all county constituents. I'm very excited about the possibilities that some of the funding that Martha was just talking about for many needs in the community. And I think that with the numbers that were just projected from Ann around COVID vaccinations, I'm very feeling hopeful. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Leslie. Mike Lane.
I too want to welcome Leslie or Leslie here. I'm mixing them up now. Leslie Schill to the county legislature, and watching the race for District 2 from my district in Dryden. It was interesting and exciting. And what it showed to us is that the special election process really works. There were two very strong candidates who worked very, very hard in the midst of a pandemic, when everything is askew, when people, you know, when you go to door, do you know what kind of reaction you're going to get when you rap on the door to say, hey, I'm running for office. Will you sign my petition? Will you vote for me? This is not an easy thing, but, as Abraham Lincoln told us during the Civil War, it's important that you have these elections, because that is what makes our democracy strong and holds us together. So congratulations, and look forward to working with you, Leslie.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? All right. Under my chair's report, most of you have said your thank you. I want to make sure that I also, or welcome to Leslie, that I also share those sentiments. For those of you who are watching, you will notice that we are at our full complement tonight. 14 districts represented, and our newest member of the legislature, Leslie Schill, representing District 2. Echoing Leslie, thanks to the District 2 voters, to our Board of Elections for making the special elections happen as quickly as it did, so we didn't sit around too long with District 2 not being represented. So we welcome you, Leslie. We're glad that you're here. We're glad you were able to get sworn in, and some of us were here to bear witness to it this afternoon with your family, and we look forward to working with you as a colleague on this amazing body. We don't always get it right, but we do put our best foot forward in whatever it is that we do. So welcome aboard, and again, we look forward to working with you. I want to share just a couple of quick remarks. Congratulations, echoing Mike, to Kyle Dake and his win. And to Cornell University, because it was always just fun to watch and see Cornell University and Ithaca mentioned as people are competing to represent the United States of America in the Olympics. So that was exciting. In a community town hall meeting, I believe back in February, I mentioned a quote from Aristotle in complimenting the great work of our staff in managing this pandemic. That quote bears repeating, that excellence is not an act, but a habit. And we have been working in everything we do throughout this pandemic, and striving for excellence are coming from a place of excellence. As a community, we have been excellent in all we do to respond to this virus. Our community partners have made it a habit. Cornell University rolled out a robust testing and monitoring program that was the model duplicated by many other campuses throughout the United States of America. They put a lot of money into it and made it happen. Many of us doubted when they said they were going to open campus. There was great uproar in the community, but they said, trust us, we are going to make this work, and they did, and many other campuses are doing the same. Tompkins-Cortland Community College, our own TC3, and Ithaca College, and Ithaca City School District put a rapid response and communication system in place so that they can keep their school communities open for those needing to attend in-person classes and respond appropriately when they have positive cases show up on campuses. This brings me to our next community partner, Community Health Systems, and a milestone that I believe is worth amplifying and celebrating. Last Friday, I believe it was, April 2nd, Community Health Systems administered its 1 millionth, let me repeat, 1 millionth COVID-19 test in Tompkins County. That is worth celebrating, so I want to give them a cheer. I was going to bring my noisemaker and, you know, all kinds of things. This is a testament to the excellent planning and professional services of the heroes and sheroes who work for Cayuga Health Systems, and I want to thank them. It's also a testament to the responsiveness of the community in playing their part to go get tested. We all were afraid of that test at first. I mean, I remember asking Dan, how was it? How did it feel? Did it hurt? We all were, because we heard all kinds of horror stories, scraping up the brain, all kinds of stuff. But our community have been going and getting tested to the point that we can administer, or we can meet 1 millionth and more getting tested. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the excellence of our local business, Rionix, in manufacturing a rapid testing machine. Get the samples, and they have to get tested to determine whether there's a positive a trace of the positive COVID virus. That machine could turn around the results of samples within 24 hours. Kudos to Rionix. And also to the excellent thinking from staff, county staff, the legislature, and the Ithaca City Common Council for investing funds in purchasing a couple of those machines from our own local business so that we can meet that milestone, so that we can get people tested rapidly. We can get those samples taken and those test results back quickly. It meant that if people get their results back quickly, they didn't have to quarantine much longer if it came back negative while they wait for 10 or 15 days for samples to be sent somewhere and then come back and maybe get lost and then get tested again. So all of those things were just areas of excellence that we made habit here in Tompkins County. On the flip side of that, nationally, we see what continues to happen. We're still looking at well over 500,000 of our American citizens who have passed away from COVID-19. Today, President Biden talked about having had administered in the United States of America 100 million plus shots in arms and vaccines. And in Tompkins County, we continue that level of excellence in doing our part in vaccinating people. We get the vaccines, we reach the communities, and we've been getting people vaccinated. Our president also set a new goal of 200 million shots in arms within his first 100 days. He started with 100 million, and in 75 days, they had exceeded that. And we want to encourage people to please get your vaccines. We now have three vaccines available, Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson. And we want to encourage our community to continue to get vaccinated. We are doing well. We are making excellence a habit in Tompkins County, and we want to continue to do that. I want to shift gears for a minute and speak to an issue that should be hurting all of us to our core. And that is this ramp up of violence against Asian and Asian Americans. And it hurts because it's not just one group of people who is carrying out this kind of violence. It's all different folks who are targeting Asians and Asian Americans. Just this week, over the weekend it was, Asian woman in the middle of downtown Manhattan, broad daylight, beat down and told that you don't belong here. For those of us who've been or who live in the marginalized communities, we know how harsh those words are when you're told over and over again you don't belong here. We know that throughout this pandemic, the national rhetoric coming from our leadership that targeted Asian and Asian Americans set a lot of people on that path to doing the same. Here in Tompkins County, I want to, and I know I can, I hope I can speak for this legislature in asking folks to please report those issues. Look out for folks. Don't be like the two doormen in Manhattan who watched this woman get beaten and did nothing. And did nothing. And I'm very, very pleased to hear that their employer fired them. Because no human being in good conscience should stand there and watch somebody who is helpless get beaten down like that, unprovoked, and say or do nothing, not even dial 911. So here in Tompkins County, we have spent a lot of time talking about reimagining policing. Part of that reimagining plan is how we as community heal, how we as community support each other. And so I'm appealing to everyone to don't just stand by and watch. If you hear it, please report it. If you don't feel confident intervening in the moment, pick up your phone. Call 911. Yell, do something to get attention, because this is not okay. Many of us have people in our families who are of Asian descent. And I can't imagine what it would feel like and how fearful. Well, I can imagine how fearful it is to be walking down the street and not knowing if you will be the next target. It is not okay in our community. Lastly, I want to circle back to just excellence in what we do. We have had the opportunity to look at the work that we're doing, to look at our communications plan, to look at our community as a whole. And the folks in our EOC, our county administrator, our director of communications, and our chief equity diversity officer have been meeting. We have talked, we have met with the Latinx community. We've been talking with the Asian community because we want to make sure that the information we are putting out there that's important to their lives, information around public health, information around reimagining public safety, that they have access to that information in a language that they can read and understand. Again, as I said to Leslie, we're not perfect, but we put our best foot forward. And we are taking steps right now to make sure that our communications go out, our communications will go out in Spanish language and at minimum a couple of Asian languages so that our community members, there's equity in them having access to the information that could save their own lives. So I wanted to make sure that you are aware and that the public is aware that we are working on this. Small steps matter towards achieving the level of excellence that we have come to provide for our community here in Tompkins County. Thank you very much for listening to me. We're going to move on to, there are no special presentations or discussions, and now we're going to go to reports from County Administrator, County Attorney, and Director of Finance. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Leslie, excuse me. There are a couple members of the public agency folks and staff who are waiting for items on the consent agenda. And I was.
Yeah, I asked that earlier. Nobody said anything. Who's here for what?
We have Brenda.
Before
West
we get to Jason, just tell me and let's get to those.
We have Brenda Westfall and Bruce Levine here about the housing, Ithaca Housing Authority.
Okay.
Resolutions.
Hi, Bruce. And Brenda? You said Brenda?
I don't see Brenda Westfall, yes.
And oh, there's Brenda.
Hi, Leslie.
Okay.
Thank you, Leslie.
Also, Liz Cameron.
So those are all consent agenda items?
Yes.
So, all right. So why don't we go ahead and take up the consent agenda, and then Jason, enjoy a little bit more time of your vacation, and I'll get back to you. So let's do that. Consent agenda are resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. I will read those resolutions. Starting with Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution A, authorizing to execute a contract with ProShed Security for confidential paper collection and shredding services for some of his county departments, ID 10003. Resolution B, Budget Adjustment, Recycling and Materials Management Department. I thought I saw Barb. Yeah. Government Operations Committee. Resolution C, Renewal of Tompkins County Department of Motor Vehicles Lease. ID 9990. Planning, Energy and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution D, Acceptance of Snowmobile Grant for the 2020-2021 season, ID 10005. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Resolution E.
I need to pull that one.
That one is being pulled. Resolution F. Negative Declaration for Northside Apartment Projects, ID 10021. Resolution G. Authorizing the execution of an agreement for payment in lieu of taxes, a pilot, by and among the County of Tompkins, Ithaca NOS Housing Development Fund Company, Inc., and Ithaca NOS Limited Partnership, ID 10022. Resolution H, authorization to disperse county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund for Northside Apartments, ID 10027. Resolution I, authorization to disperse county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund for Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, INHS, Community Housing Trust, Ithaca, Freeville, Scattered Sites Project, ID 10026. Resolution J, authorizing the execution of a revised agreement for payments in lieu of taxes by and among the County of Tompkins and Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, ID 10025. Resolution K, amendment of the 2021 Tompkins County budget to reflect appropriation of 2021-2022 budgets for the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council and authorization to implement the amendment, ID 9981. Resolution L, authorizing 2021-2022 Federal Transit Administration Section 5339 Bus and Bus Facilities Program Grant Application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, Inc., ID 10031. Resolution M, authorizing 2021 Federal Transit Administration.
Leslie, need to pull that one.
Okay, M is pulled. Resolution H, Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution N, renewal of Drug and Alcohol Council of Tompkins County Incorporated 5-year lease, ID 9978. So resolutions M and which one? Resolution E are pulled. And that's all we have for consent agenda. May I have someone move the consent agenda, please? Moved by Amanda Champion, seconded by Deb Dawson. Any discussion on the consent agenda? All right, all in favor of consent agenda, roll call vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Ed Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Scheel?
Yes.
Mike Sickler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Ian Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie Matheny Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously, so that takes care of the resolutions for Brenda, for Bruce, for Barbara. I think we're good there. All right.
Thank you.
Have
all.
Good night, everyone. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us, and it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Leslie, it's up to you, but there are staff waiting for those other two.
There's Lisa. No.
Who else is Cameron, I think?
And Dwight for Amway.
Why can't I see these people?
Liz is bottom right.
There's Dwight.
That's all I need.
Okay. All right. Well, we have other staff who are waiting for these resolutions as well. So I'll just reshuffle and take those two that were pulled off of consent agenda. So, Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha, can you take Resolution E?
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair. Resolution E, authorizing submittal of 2020 New York State Homes and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program Application, ID 9989. I so move.
Have a second, please. Seconded by Deb Dawson. Discussion, Dan Klein.
Thank you. If the county gets this money, there'll be a grant process, and all the parameters of this grant eligibility have not been worked out yet. But it's possible that I might be eligible for this grant and would apply for it. So just to rule out that possibility, I need to abstain from this vote.
I think that's all. I think there are no other issues.
Pretty good. Okay. Yeah. All right, ready to vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Scheel?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Andy Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Abstain.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie Matheny Claiborne?
Yes.
With 13 ayes, 1 abstention.
Okay, that carries. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
And Martha, go ahead and take Resolution M. I see Dwight.
Resolution M, but I'm going to first have to ask Dwight if the title changed, because I can't actually put my hands on the substitute right this minute.
Is there?
Or maybe Kathy remembers.
No, the title changed, as far as I know.
My understanding is just the number changed. Authorizing 2021 Federal Transit Administration Section 5339C Low or No Emission Vehicle Program Competitive Grant Application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated. That's document 10030. And the substitute was emailed to everybody, I believe, yesterday. So I move the substitute. Yeah.
We have that. May I have a second, please? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion.
So if Dwight wants to explain the differences here, that'd be great.
Hold on a second.
I think no. Martha should put on the table what was approved by committee, and then a motion to amend should be made. Be accepted as friendly, but what needs to be moved was approved by committee.
Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, so erase what I just did, but I now am moving what's on packet page 40 that was sent in the first packet.
All right. So that's moved, and that's seconded still. And then there is a substitute on some changes to the resolve.
I'll be happy to move, Madam Chair.
So, could it be friendly?
That's yes. Friendly.
Yes.
That's friendly.
It's very friendly to the mover and the seconder. But thank you, Deborah, for being so fast on the draw.
Do we need a second?
No. It's friendly to the mover and the seconder.
Okay.
All right. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Maury?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Shield?
Yes.
Mike Siglett?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yeah.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corbin?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That carries. Thank you for your patience tonight. All right, one more time. I can't see well. Is there anybody else waiting for anything? Okay. Well, let's get Jason back from his vacation. 5 minutes of extra vacation time.
Good evening.
Report of County Administrator, Jason Molina.
Good evening, everyone.
Evening.
Good to see you all. Welcome, Legislator Schill. Welcome to the legislature. We'll reach out shortly to set up some times to get together with some of the leadership and go over some of the fun that you volunteered for. So we have a good presentation. I'm going to let Dominic post it. This is actually the one full year that we have now been doing this presentation. I say this every time, but anyway, when they're getting it up, Leslie, you had some great history about what what we've gone through, what we've accomplished, and I can't say enough that community partners are the major reason this community has been able to achieve so much, and the community themselves being a partner in this. CHS obviously being a huge partner, Cornell, this legislature being a leader has contributed to the 1 million tests. When I talk to colleagues and I say, this community has conducted over 1 million tests, I follow it saying that that's more than some states have done in terms of testing, which is a true statement. It's pretty amazing and remarkable. So quite an achievement, a lot more to do. And we'll talk a little bit more about what we have coming ahead. So let's move through some of this. We have a few slides. We've got some updates on demographics. So I know you generally like to see that information. So I'm not going to go through all of this. Been a lot of executive orders that have been coming out. Executive orders that have been a little late to the table, although they were announced several weeks ago, particularly when we talk about travel guidance that finally came out, I believe, April 2nd. Also some changes with criteria for folks that can get vaccinated, which is huge. Now we're talking, I believe today it opened up to 16 plus. So essentially everyone has the ability to get access to their dose, to their vaccine. As you can see, a top 45% first dose. I think there are a few counties that have a higher percentage, but these are very, very rural counties with very, very small populations. I think a half of ours or even less than half our population or a third of ours, to say that we are leading the way, would be a correct statement in terms of getting folks as vaccinated as quickly as we can. I'm not going to go through all of the activity. We are going to be shifting, and I know Frank will talk a little bit about this. We are going to be shifting and continue to shift on messaging, and ensuring that folks, feel comfortable, understand the efficacy of the vaccine, and continuing to encourage folks to get the vaccine. I will say this week, it's National Public Health Week. Sent a note to our public health staff thanking them for the great work they've done over this past year, the tireless work that they've done protecting our community, and just want to give them a shout out to all our folks in the health department, and thank you for all their hard work. Go to the next slide. Here is the history. This is something you've seen regularly. Talk about hours worked. That doesn't go down. It only goes up with this response and the cost and value of that of those hours worked. FFCRA leave. We did extend FFCRA leave. It was extended with the most recent stimulus bill. We decided to continue to extend it for our employees. It's an important piece of the puzzle, particularly for leave with dependents related to COVID challenges, which still exist. Child care still can be a challenge, as well as other dependent care. We are still awaiting and working on understanding the tax credit or reimbursement we may receive, which was passed as part of the stimulus this time around. There's not clarity out from the Department of Labor, but we have had, you know, several folks confirm that as a municipality, we could qualify for some of these tax credits related to FFCRA leave. So as we know more, as with a lot of things that have been included in the stimulus bill, more guidance to come and to follow. So when we know more about it, we'll be able to share that with folks. We continue to do COVID testing and navigating the reimbursement. I don't know what to call it. You know, George was complaining earlier about challenges with Albany. I could tell you we probably feel the same way both about Albany and the feds with respect to reimbursement. But Jess is doing a good job. Amy's doing a good job trying to figure out the path to do that. And we'll continue to submit reimbursements, our expenses for reimbursement to the federal government and through the state. Next slide. Frank, I think I'll turn this over to you.
Great. Thanks, Jason. So we're jumping into the data slides that you've seen in the past with some additional time added. I think this slide kind of demonstrates what we've seen over the last few weeks with a spike here in cases. Somebody alluded to it during Privilege of the Floor that we were at 113 this morning. I believe tomorrow when we report we'll be under 100 active cases. So things continue to go in the right direction. Of course, we continue to monitor that and work with our community partners to keep the disease numbers as low as we can. No, it's not wanting to go in here. Oh, there we go. So here we're talking about the they shouldn't have put me in charge of this. Here's the prevalence of cases related to positive tests. Obviously, we had a spike in the end of last year that we're all aware of, and then things dropped off. And then you couple that with the significant increase in testing that occurred as students returned to campus here, and that really demonstrates where our positivity rates have been and why they've been so low. You can see the little blip there in the end of March, early April, that we're just now coming out of. This was a graph we wanted to share about the vaccination progress. And so what you see here are first and second doses, both from the county perspective and then from the state's numbers of all county residents. We're roughly trending at about 50% of the vaccinations coming here locally for our residents, which has really helped us keep those numbers going well. And not that we're counting, but as of today, we're actually second only to Hamilton County, which has 4,500 residents, I believe, in percentage of people vaccinated. So it is a testament to the work that's going on at the mall and all of the other vaccination efforts we've been able to put in place here in the county. So talking a little bit about what we've been able to do up at the mall, you see the almost 22,000 first doses and almost 13,000 second doses administered. So making strong progress. On Monday, they did close to 1,600 doses in that single day, which is a record for us in a day. And it just proves that they're continuing to become more efficient and have the ability to vaccinate large numbers of people. We're still working through our senior living facilities. We have been able to vaccinate 365 individuals. About 240 of those were transported by TCAT and Gadabout to the mall site. All the rest we've been doing with our mobile unit, our public health nurses going out to the facilities. And to date, we've done 11 facilities here in the county. in our homeless and hard to reach populations. We partnered with Reach Medical, and they have been able to vaccinate 73 homeless individuals here in the county. And just yesterday, they did a small pop-up pod at Southside Community Center where they were able to vaccinate 30 individuals there. So making some good inroads. The homebound individuals, we began yesterday with our first trip out. We vaccinated 15 people. We'll be going out again tomorrow to do 15 more, and we'll be continuing that program until we reach all the homebound individuals. It's very logistically challenging to do the homebound. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine makes it so we only have to make one trip, but it's not very shelf stable. So it really limits the capacity that any one nurse can do in a day. But we're going to make some good inroads in that over the next couple of weeks to try to reach that population. Today we delivered 20 J&J vaccines to the jail that they'll be administering tomorrow to the population there that is interested in being vaccinated. So that'll be that'll take care of the current inmates that are interested in being vaccinated. Again, the handling of the vaccine makes it challenging for an ongoing program. Once you puncture the vial, you have 6 hours to administer all 5 doses. So we're going to be working with the jail to monitor as new folks come in. When they have enough individuals, we'll make sure that they get additional vials of vaccine. We do have pop-up clinics one we've already completed, you're aware of, at GIAC. Beverly J. Martin with GIAC support. That was a New York State-sponsored pop-up. We are planning an additional one at Lehman Alternative Community School for this Saturday. An additional 200 doses are being allocated for that, and we're working with community partners to get the word out in that community, hoping individuals that are walkable to LACS will take advantage of getting vaccinated there. So we've had a lot of requests for data on vaccinations, and so we've been able to pull some of the information from the state immunization system. This is the age distribution, and I think this really tells the story of our prioritization efforts. Obviously, we've made significant inroads with our senior populations. The blue columns are our percent of total population, and you can see the percentages that we've been able to achieve amongst our total vaccines administered. So making some good inroads, as we would imagine, that age 20 to 29 and 10 to 19 are just now becoming eligible if they didn't have an underlying health condition or were an essential worker. So we're hoping that we'll be catching up with those in the next week or so. So we're glad to see this. We've exceeded the state's goal of 75% of our 65 plus population being vaccinated. So we're happy to have achieved that. And as we continue to do, the homebound folks will continue to reach more of those individuals. Our race demographics are here as well. We've got some work to do. Obviously, there's almost 10% that's unknown because individuals are able to decline to answer these questions when they register. But we do know that we have work to do to reach our Black and Asian communities, and that's part of the reason that we're looking at pop-ups and figuring out other ways to try to reach those communities. Same with our Hispanic population and non-Hispanic. You can see the breakdown here. There's an 18.5 percentage points of unknown. So it's hard to know exactly where we are, but we definitely recognize where we have work to do. Farm workers are a priority for us, and we're going to be looking to put together an opportunity, hopefully next week, to take some vaccine out to those populations. I've been talking about pop-ups, and I know there's been a lot of question about why we haven't done more to date, and really just wanted to, you know, explain the logistics of what goes into that and what's allowing us to do it more freely now. First, there's no more restrictions on our allocated doses, meaning when the state gives us vaccine, they don't tell us you have to use it on this particular population. We're able to vaccinate anyone that is currently eligible, which now is anyone that is over 16. So that's really good news, and it gives us a lot of flexibility. The one thing I would point out about the 16-plus, the Pfizer vaccine is the only one where a 16- or 17-year-old is eligible. That vaccine has been studied and proved safe and effective for that age group. The others are in trials now, but are not yet approved for those age groups. So when we say everyone 16-plus is eligible, that is true, but they have to seek a Pfizer vaccine clinic. And as we understand it, the state is prioritizing that Pfizer vaccine at their state sites. So we would encourage those 16 and 17-year-olds to look to state sites for registration until such time as we get more Pfizer vaccine. The supply has increased and become more consistent. Our contact tracing, as our numbers have gone down, has become less labor-intensive, and we've been able to use our public health nurses to do some of these pop-ups and mobile unit clinics that we've been able to do. And our focus with these are on hard-to-reach populations, so people of color, our rural populations with transportation issues, farm workers, and migrant labor. So we talked about Layman Alternative Community School next weekend. The week after, we're working on a plan to try to reach farm workers. If that doesn't come together by next week, we would do a rural pod in one of our rural communities and continue to try to put together a plan for the farm workers. So lots of work going into identifying who's interested and where it would be most effective to reach those individuals. And our registry is currently being translated into 6 common languages. So as that happens, hopefully that will create additional accessibility for those looking to get a vaccine. And that is the end of our slides.
I would also add that we're working with CMC to provide more information, signage, and assistance with different languages at the testing as well as vaccination sites. So we're working with them now to expand their capabilities at all those sites as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Frank. Questions going across my screen here. Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Frank. That you guys are doing a bang-up job. I'm really impressed, and I'm happy to see that the registry is being made more widely available because I love that registry. I do have a question for Jason. Jason, on one of your slides, you mentioned that our COVID-related expenses to date are close to $3 million. And I'm wondering, do we have any idea how much of that will be reimbursed by FEMA so that we don't have to use ARP money for it?
I don't, but we can probably, a big portion of that is testing related. So we can probably take that out and make assumptions that if that's fully reimbursed, that the difference would probably be a portion of what's remaining. That'd probably be the best we can get at this point. We have the testing information, so we can probably send that out to the legislature later when we know the breakdown a little bit, being what's testing related, what's not. A big portion of that is testing related.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Henry Granison.
Yes. Thank you guys for the report, and thank you for the 1 millionth test. How many people are currently on the registry since we opened things up?
$32,000 altogether have been on it, and there's currently $19,000. Because we remove folks once they get vaccinated.
Okay. Also, Jason, how well is the money that we spent in the early this year in terms of free testing? How far is that going, and what's the update on that?
Well, at this stage of the game, because it's supposed to be 100% reimbursed, there isn't a need for another reappropriation because it's going to be all submitted to FEMA. So, then the question really comes into play is the other 25% that you appropriated twice, should also be reimbursable. So like I said, there's some learning going on FEMA and the state's part as to who's first payer, who's payer last resort. So we're in some discussions now as to how, what needs to be submitted and so on and so forth. This will take a little bit of time to clean up, but at the end of the day, technically all the testing should be 100% reimbursable. So we should essentially make back what we committed to it.
Okay. That money will go back to the county then?
Yes, yeah, it would. When is another question, but yes, it should.
Okay, thank you.
The check is in the mail. Martha.
Thank you. Henry had a couple of my questions. Frank and team, all this outreach is really spectacular, very creative, entrepreneurial, and very exciting. I was really intrigued when I participated in a Chamber of Commerce IAED Energy Summit or Economic Summit a week or two ago, and they actually had captions across the bottom of the screen for the whole presentation. And I wonder if that's something, have we thought about that in terms of, especially for our, for those office hours kind of presentations or any town halls, any of the audio stuff that we have, is that something that's possible? Or is that something to look into?
Yeah, we're certainly aware of it. I believe that was a Cornell-funded approach to having the teletype across the bottom. It is costly to do, but we are looking into all manners of ways we can get the message out more effectively. Wanting to be responsible from a cost perspective as well.
Thank you. I was sure it wasn't free, but I didn't know. And I wonder if you have looked into and thought about the Excelsior Pass. I think it's just New York State, what some places are calling the vaccine passport. Henry, did you just hold one up? Hold that
I
up.
I just held my phone. I have it.
Your phone, okay. Frank or anybody, what do you think about it?
I downloaded it onto my phone and have my vaccine on there to just wanted to see what it was. It's pretty straightforward. Assuming you have internet access and a smartphone, you can also print it out from a computer, so you have a paper version. I think it's going to end up being fairly necessary, depending on which way the state goes as they start to open up additional businesses, venues, and the such. If there's a requirement to have been vaccinated or tested to attend or participate in an event, it is a fairly easy, straightforward way to have documentation that you have been. I think the larger question on whether we need to have a passport, at all is still, in the discussion phases, because it's really a national thing that needs to be considered. If we're doing it here in New York, if folks are traveling from other parts of the country and they don't have it, it just creates chaos if we have a state-by-state approach to these things. So hopefully there will be some thought on whether or not at a national level it's going to be required.
Okay, thank you. And just your estimate of kind of how we're doing as far as opening, are our businesses and restaurants and et cetera, like open too much, not enough, or the right amount? Is there, and I guess now that we see the numbers kind of the positive numbers coming back down again, it was up at kind of a scary high level for a while. Do you feel like what's going on locally is appropriate?
Yes, I do. Really, are we open too much or not is being guided by the state. You know, they're making those decisions on what those businesses can do. But I would suggest that we are heading in the right direction, and we should be continually looking to relax the public health guidance wherever it's prudent, particularly as more and more people are getting vaccinated and disease numbers are relatively low. There's a tipping point, right? The being closed and all of the impacts that come from that begin to outweigh, you know, what we're trying to prevent. So I think we're heading in the right direction. I have to commend our local businesses. They've been extremely responsive under extremely difficult circumstances, and our EH folks have been working tirelessly to try to share as much information as we get as the public health guidance does begin to relax, and our businesses have been very responsive to that. So I think we're heading in the right direction, and we'll continue that way, and we'll get more and more people vaccinated and hopefully get everyone back open again.
Thank you so much, Frank, and to all your team. Thank you.
Ann Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Frank and Jason. So I want to also thank you because I had sent out an email last week, I think it was, regarding a constituent and trying to get their elderly parent vaccinated who they're taking care of in their home. And so thank you for getting more of the word out to people. And that particular family was able to get their person vaccinated by somebody coming into the home. So thank you for that. And I was just had a couple of questions. Oh, and I think, I don't know if I said it, but thank you for updating information on the website too at the health department regarding people who are homebound. For the number of tests, the COVID-19 tests, the million, reaching the million, is that including people getting tested where?
It's here in Tompkins County, correct, Frank?
Yes, yep.
It's just so here in Tompkins County.
So that's just through Cayuga Health?
Yeah, so it's the testing that has been done as part of the Cayuga Health Systems here in Tompkins County.
So that doesn't include the colleges or anything?
No, it does include the colleges. The Cornell testing is a partnership with Cayuga Health Systems, so okay. that number is included in there.
Okay, great, thank you. And two other questions. Some people have been asking me about laminating their vaccination card. Good idea, not good idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for folks to keep that card handy. It's certainly acceptable to laminate it if that's going to help them keep it protected. You can also take a picture of it. You know, if folks have a smartphone, take a picture of both sides of it. There's many different ways. The Excelsior Pass is another way to have it on you. So, yeah, we do want folks to have that handy because we're not yet sure exactly, you know, when it's going to be needed. So laminating is not a problem.
Okay. I think part of the issue is people were wondering if at some point we need a booster, if the card is laminated, if that's going to be an issue. But I suppose, could they make a new one at that point for you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if someone laminates their card and then we have to do more, we'll figure out a way for them to do that. I'm not suggesting everyone go out and laminate their cards, but if it makes you feel better that it'll keep it protected, it's not going to stop you from getting any additional vaccines.
Yeah, Staples was offering free lamination of your card. Last question is, I had someone call me today. What if there's businesses that aren't following the guidance? If maybe they relaxed a little too much, how do they report that?
Yeah, all of the same mechanisms are still in place for reporting that. I believe there's links on our webpage to the New York State reopening a complaint process that ultimately then comes back to us. I got to admit, it's been a long time since I've looked at the complaint process, so I'm not It is still all on our webpage, so they should be able to see it there. And if somebody doesn't have internet access, they can always call the health department and or 211.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All righty then. Henry and then Shauna.
Yes. Frank, I just want to ask you about the alleged fourth surge, like the surge in Michigan. Is there any surges going on along the East Coast that you know of?
I don't know particularly, Henry. I'm sorry. I'm kind of hyper-focused on what's happening here locally. But, you know, the potential for additional spikes could happen, you know, at any point if we get too far ahead of ourselves before the vaccinations get where we want them to be. So we're still encouraging folks to follow the guidance as it's out there. The most important is wearing the mask, the social distancing, good hand hygiene. We really need to be vigilant about that. And then just monitor as we continue to reopen. If there's anything that causes a concern, we'd certainly communicate about that.
Okay. And Jason, do you know whether the sheriff's office is adding details to their weekend at the colleges, especially in light of Kendall Days, which would be the first sad day in May at Ithaca College?
They're not adding any new details at this moment. If anything is specific to Kendall, I don't know that information. We can ask the sheriff, but there's no additional details like we had in the spring or the fall. I'm sorry.
There is planning going on around those events. The colleges know that they're coming, and I know our sheriff has been a part of those conversations with Ithaca College Police and other community groups. So there is effort to try to address the concerns that might come from those events.
Thanks.
Shauna.
Yeah, it just came out today that Moderna should be lasting around 6 months for the vaccine. I was wondering if there was conversation about at some point whenever we all have to go for boosters, how that was going to work. Are you going to have a second registry? Or is there at least conversation that we're starting to have on how to keep people vaccinated?
So, Shauna, I am going to hope that we don't need a booster and hope the science evolves to tell us that. But if it did, obviously, we would build systems to be prepared to do that. At the rate that we're going, we should be fairly close to finishing the second dose of this first round. So there shouldn't be a lot of crossover if that were to occur. So hopefully that will make it make it less confusing for the public as if we have to navigate through that.
Thank you.
All right, Martha, you get the last word.
All right. It sounds like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. Like as soon as you finish, you have to start over again. A question about the variants. What are we seeing in terms of our testing?
Variants are certainly part of the disease pool here in the county. We know that we reported the numbers a week or so ago that have been identified. I should point out that the way that we're finding out about our local variants is through a research project at Cornell. So we're not doing this from a diagnostic perspective. It really has no diagnostic value. We treat people the same way regardless of what variant they have. But it is useful to know, and I think it's fair to say that we have a pretty significant portion of our cases being of different variants at this point. But that's kind of what we expected. And really the goal here is to get folks vaccinated as quickly as possible so we can limit any future variants and any negative impacts from the ones we have already.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for the time and answering questions and continuing to think strategically and do the wonderful work you're doing.
Jason, is there anything else from you? I know I do have to say, legislators, sorry, we will have a brief, real brief executive session.
Too late.
I have nothing for nothing else, Madam Chair. Thank you.
The purposes of discussing personnel matters related to a specific person. It will be brief. Kathy and I want to get out here while it's still light out. Okay, County Attorney, is there anything from you, Jonathan?
Nope, I'm going to help you get out while it's still light. No report.
You rock.
All right.
Finance Director, Rick Schneider.
Good evening.
Good evening, Rick.
Nice to see you all. I'd like to welcome Leslie Schill to the legislative group here. Welcome aboard. Tonight I'm going to show you 2 months of sales tax information, and they are not as favorable as we had hoped, so I'm going to pause here for a moment to share my screen so we can first look at January's data. You should be viewing it now. Do you see it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes,
we
can.
What we're looking at here in the center section of the report is what we always highlight, the county portion. You can see that the county portion of sales tax distributions for January was down 16.17%. And, of course, the year-to-date is the exact same number because we only have 1 month of the year to look at. And that represents a decrease of $503,103 year over year. I would add that in January was the month that we had that $331,000 hit to our sales tax by the state. That was for the distressed health facilities. And had it not been for that, we probably would have been in around about $150,000 loss, give or take a little bit there. But the biggest portion, about two-thirds of the deficit as compared to last year, if you will, was caused by that hit that we took from the state for the distressed health facilities. And I'm going to now share with you February's data. As you hear, see, for February, we were down 6.8%, which is still not good news, but it's better than January. And as of the end of February, if you look at the dollar amount of that had come in, we were at about $4.9 million coming in year to date compared to about $5.7 million for the preceding year. That's a difference of a negative $676,915, which means we're down as of the end of February 11.95%, so roughly 12%. The only other thing I'm sharing tonight for the first time is a little graph that we started. In this graph, there's only really 2 or 3 years that we're looking at. Jason and Kevin are wanting to add 2019 as the base year. I don't have that on here yet. I know that they're working on a report that's a bit more refined. But what I am showing here is this blue line that zigs and zags and carries on all over the place. And that was last year. That's 2020. So the blue line that goes all around and about is last year. The little red line here shows January and February that were actually below last year's January and February. And you have to remember, January and February last year was before COVID hit. They were remarkably good months. They may have even been, I don't recollect if they were our best months, January and February, but they were very high months. So coming in underneath them for the first 2 months was expected. And then you'll ask, what's the green bar that goes across? Well, I projected here, this is on an annualized basis what our budget is for 2021. So any activity as we go throughout the year, we can monitor against this steady green line, which represents our monthly sales tax budget, which, as you can see, we are below. Next time when we present it, or maybe when Jason brings you figures, we'll have another year on here, which will be 2019, because that's what they would like to start using as our base year. That's a year that before any of the pandemic hit, that is, of course, one of our higher years, but they're going to start with showing 2019. So the report going forward, I'll also show that 2019 data also. So I'll open it up to any questions or remarks from Jason if he'd like to add something to it.
Thank you, Rick. Shauna Black, you have a question?
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask in regards to, for a while there were some hotels that were not paying their hotel tax. Have they started paying?
I really can't answer that tonight. I haven't monitored it for the last couple of months. I know that a report that's to come out soon, I'll bring that information to you at the next meeting after they run on an awkward quarter, which means it's December, January, February. They have till the end of March, and then we're not preparing any kind of report until April. So I think at our next meeting, we should have that data available for you.
Okay.
Bring it to you then.
I guess my other question, too, is that I know that there are some hotels that could have been part of not paying their taxes that I think are either on the market or have sold. If they have not paid those taxes, would there be a lien on the property?
Oh, yes, of course. They would be treated, you know, just like any other a property. And if there is back hotel tax due, that's something that Jonathan and I would have to discuss to figure out how and if we could lean against it for the outstanding hotel occupancy tax also. But I'll try to gather a little bit more information for you on that also.
Okay. Thanks, Rick.
Mm-hmm. Henry or Martha, do either one of you need Rick to keep his screen up? Okay, thanks. Henry, go ahead.
Yes, I know that we'll have our budget retreat in a couple of weeks, but Jason, how do these 2 months compare to what your formula, you know, states what the sales tax should be?
It's really too hard to tell right now. I mean, January was not a good comparison month. February is not encouraging compared to 2020, but one of the things we're going to do is Kevin, Rick, and I. Kevin and I have worked on some different graphs to look at it, you know, to be able to compare, as Rick said, the 2019 as a base year. March will help us have at least 3 months, and then we'll probably pick out some of those diversions to see what it may look at, you know, just so we're comparing apples to apples, and to see, you know, maybe get a better understanding as to where things are going to fare. Keep in mind, March last year and April last year, we were in a complete shutdown. So I'm hoping that it's going to be better than that. If it's not, then my model doesn't matter because it's absolutely useless. that's how I would approach right now. We should have at least 3 months of data for the retreat. Like I said, we'll try to pull out some of the diversions because those are one-offs to see where it might be trending. If it's, you know, 6% below, you know, if that's a common number or not. And then we'll have to go from there. You know, there's nothing to suggest right now that what we have is well off. Remember, it was about a 8% or so decrease to 2019's actual. So, we'll do some comparisons of 1920 and 21 based on what we have, and we'll go from there. It's early, you know, it's always difficult in a regular, so to speak, a quote unquote regular year when it comes budget retreat time with only 3 months of information. It's really hard with this. but we'll continue to monitor it. The graphs that we're going to put together, we'll present monthly for you so you can see and we can identify any trending, and we're hypersensitive to it. So if we see things that are unexplainable, that they're tailing in a different direction, we'll be able to talk about it earlier than later.
Yeah, just to hear that Cornell announced a commencement, which will be no visitors today. That's it.
He said, Cornell announced a commencement with no visitors.
Okay. I think I see he's doing the same thing, only students.
Yeah, I see you doing the same thing.
You know, if you're a parent like me, you'll be sneaking in. Deborah.
I didn't realize you had such a felonious heart, Leslie. Yeah, I had a senior moment, Rick, right when you started talking about two-thirds of something was attributable to the state withholding the distressed hospital funding. Can you reiterate two-thirds of what?
In January, the $503,000 difference between last year's January collection and this year's January collection, it looks pretty severe when you're down $500,000. But $331,000 of that was the highway robbery.
So we're not really, it's not really quite as bad as it looks.
I mean, we're hit. We're going to take the hit, but it's explainable. You know, we'd only be down, you know, maybe $150,000 instead of $500,000 had they taking that cut for the distressed health facilities.
Thank you.
All right, Martha.
Yeah, along those lines, just the idea of, it would make us feel better if you could put either a bar on those, you know, what's the level of those payments? Because you got AIM in, what, December usually?
Well, we had considered that, but then they're going to be taking this same payment again over over four more months on a quarterly basis, and then AIM at the end of the year. And before you know it, you have almost every other month with colored bars. And it would get a little busy after a while and pretty depressing, too, to see how many months that they're taking money from us. But, you know, I'll bring you the information as I have it.
I'll give you a bright side to this. The bright side to this is that when we did the budget estimates for sales tax, we had a large, the distress facility, so the distress hospital diversion was based on actual sales tax of a prior year. Well, because we did so bad last year, it's actually less than we originally estimated. So there's that's the good side of things.
Well, that's exciting.
It's an optimistic.
As a footnote, among my conversations with Anna Kellis, Assemblywoman Kellis, she said maybe it was Cuca Health, asked her, so where is the hospital fund? Like, where's that money? And is that going anywhere? And she thought to ask the comptroller's office, and the comptroller's office said, oh, yeah.
No one knows.
Then the comptroller's office come to find out, it was just in the general fund. There was no distressed hospital fund set up. So that I think that kind of has led to a new account line being in the books, thanks to Anna. That is also just a two-year hit to us. Of course, then the following, when that expires, they'll probably – you know, do another redesign of Medicaid, which is usually not good for us either. Just a question about the Airbnb tax or the small hotel. I have no idea. Hotel tax is different than this, but did we start charging that yet? I can't remember.
Yes.
The 5%? Okay.
I believe, yep. Started, right, Rick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much. The graph is great. I really, really like seeing it that way. It's very, very helpful. Thank you.
All righty, folks. We still got the rest of our meeting. Shauna.
I just have a quick question. The online sports betting, is that going to be similar to casino money?
I don't know.
Do we know? Okay.
It'd
be nice to get a few million from that every year.
I don't know the answer to that.
Michael is shaking his head furiously, like, no! And so is Martha.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Thank you for the report.
You're welcome.
And the graph, everything in between. Okay. Let's move on. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yeah, thank you. I would like to pull off Resolution P, amending the rules of the legislature, and take that back to committee for there's been some further questions, and we want to have another chance to do a few more edits.
All right, standing committee reports. Actually, before I go to standing committee reports, Rich, I want to ask you a quick question. All this discussion about sales tax and so on and so forth, is there anything on the IDA front that you think is coming down the pike that might help our situation?
Certainly there are very large projects that are in the pipeline, but of course the early years of the new projects don't really make much tax impact. They will over the longer term. However, we have a lot of projects that are in their later stages now because our growth period has been going on. So, you know, this might be a better question for Jay over at assessment, but I think we're going to see some significant bumps to our tax base, which would
okay.
help.
Okay. That's good to know. Oh, I think I opened up a can of worms. Shauna. Sorry.
I actually had a few constituents write emails in regards to the city center being sold at a $25 million profit. And that being on a tax abatement that transferred to the new owner. And it seems like to me that there's a big kind of hole, loophole, and these tax abatements transferring. And I can't imagine that it would have sold for a profit of $25 million had it had not had that tax abatement. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit to that, Rich.
Sure. That was a shocking change in valuation. The governance committee of the IDA is meeting, I think, next week, and this is on the agenda to talk about whether we should be thinking about a change in our policy. What our present policy is that we provide certainty to projects, that the terms of the deal that is made with the IDA does not change, even if there is a sale, so long as the new owner agrees to abide by all the terms of the tax abatement agreement. With that said, you know, we're probably going to have a discussion about whether we want to continue that, providing that certainty in the face of a sale like this. On the other hand, Shauna, you might share with your constituents that this is good news in terms of tax base, that as the abatement winds down, there's going to be a significantly higher valuation on this property. We won't see it for several years, but this is a incredible bet on our community by an outside buyer, which says a lot about where they think that the valuations in the city are going. It still is a shocking number. And
yeah. I think their frustration was that this sold at a profit for $25 million on the backs of our taxpayers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they profited. Had that tax abatement not been transferable, it wouldn't have had an increase of $25 million, right?
Right. You asked a couple questions, and I didn't get to that one. You're right. Certainly the tax abatement played into the purchase price, I would think. But it was not the major factor. You don't see that kind of price differential because of a tax abatement. I forget what the total value of the tax abatement is over the course of the life of the agreement, but it's not this. It's substantially less.
Sure. All right, well, let's don't get too deep into this, Rich. When the governance committee meets and whatever decisions, if you can just do a liaison report for us, that'll, you know, keep us up to date on what's going on.
That'll be great. Yes.
Thanks. Deborah, you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to urge the IDA board to consider that possibly there should be some sort of limitation on how quickly a developer can turn these properties over, especially when you're dealing with an out-of-town developer, because the temptation to flip the property, take your money and run on to the next town that's going to give you a big tax abatement is well nigh irresistible.
All right. I think Rich has heard and the committee meets, so talk. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to standing committees. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we met on Thursday, March 18th. A lot of what we did was taken care of in the resolutions we had on the consent agenda. We have one resolution that will be coming a little later, which is the reimbursement for the George Road Bridge to the town of Dryden with respect to the local share that saved us a lot of money at the county. We did have a report from Mike Hall at the airport about the what he was projecting as the total grants that we're are expecting here in the $5 million range coming in for the airport project. Some of which we've already received that will help us hopefully hold down some of the capital costs. Although some of these grants may need to be used for operating deficits that we've had because of the difficulties with the airline traffic happening at all during the COVID crisis. But that's something we'll keep track of because we want to see the total amount that we've had to borrow, will have had to borrow for the airport project as low as possible. We talked about our goals. We have several. I just want to read them. I'm not going to talk about any of them, but just so you can see what the committee's talking about. We want to move the commercial driver's license testing site forward to be located near the airport so the testing can be conducted in Tompkins County. We want to update the committee and the legislature on the trail system in Tompkins County, including such things as the permit for the trail past the gate in Dryden by Game Farm Road, the Route 13 pedestrian bridge, other kinds of things like that. We want to look into increasing the number of water fountains in the county buildings to help reduce the use of single-use plastics. We want to discuss the safety and maintenance checks in buildings and do everything we can to ensure all buildings are safe. We want to properly have the sign for the Governor D. Tompkins building displayed. And I should mention, but we did review that, the signage for the building with Harrell Lamaro, and we should be seeing those signs that, fabricated fairly soon. We want a review of the new solid waste disposal contract, see how that's operating during the year. We want to discuss the condition of the jail facility, and we want to review the report on the accessibility of our buildings. So those are some of the things we're going to be doing this year.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Questions for Mike? Okay. Moving on. Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is next Tuesday, the 13th of April at 10:30. We were able to have meetings with our three state senators and a brief meeting with our assemblywoman, and we will reschedule with Anna, the assemblywoman, to finish up the. But in fact, what Tiger's going to be looking at next? Can y'all hear Rosie in the next room? I close the door. I close the door. I don't know what she's yakking at, but next week, we'll be talking about what kind of post-budget lobbying we may want to do. For example, civil service reform, raise the age bed capacity, that those kinds of issues. So we'll be talking about those things next Tuesday. An interesting comment from Charlie Krasinski. He'll be speaking at next week's meeting from Cornell's Government Affairs in Albany. He said, I think we'll have a final state budget by then. So stay tuned. We're hoping to get somebody from NYSAC to join us next Tuesday as well. So stay tuned, because we will do additional meetings on specific topics in the next couple of months with state lawmakers as appropriate for those committees. So,
all right. Thank you, Martha. Questions from Martha? No? Okay. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you, Leslyn. We met last Thursday, and we had a pretty succinct meeting. Everyone was kind of been worn out from other topics. But we did have several resolutions, which you'll see here. And our next meeting will be May 6th at noon. And I believe we will be welcoming Leslie Schill to join our committee. And we look forward to having you there, Leslie, and with all the exciting policies and rules and fun stuff that goes through government operations. And I'm happy to take questions before the resolutions.
Any questions for Amanda? All right, go ahead with your resolutions.
All right, we have resolution O, to update the administrative policy manual, policy 03-20, adjustments and transfers affecting fringe benefits, policy 04-05, adjustments of fringe accruals, and policy 11-36, affirmative action, and ID 10039. And
I have a second.
Move that.
Thank you. May I have a second, please? Second by Rich John. Discussion? All right. Vote. Oh, sorry. Martha? Martha, you're muted.
Okay. Sorry. On line 21, I'd asked Amanda earlier about this. The policy 1136 can be replaced with a one-page policy. And then she pointed to page 48. Is that the one page? And is that, do we say hereby is or shall be replaced with the one page as such, you know, as follows? The way it's written right now sounds like it might be someday in the future.
Right. I think I'm just trying to find the resolution. Yeah, I think we can change that to say policy 11-36 will be or is replaced with a one-page policy. And if Lisa Holmes thinks that that's incorrect, I'll ask her to jump in, since she's our leader on all these policies.
Okay.
All right.
Thumbs up from Lisa.
Thank you.
Good.
All right. Roll call vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Ed Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Clareborn?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 nays.
All right. We also have Resolution Q, adoption of local law number of 2021, a local law amending Chapter 80 of the County Code and repealing Article 30.04 of the County Charter to allow for the merging of the Stop DWI and Traffic Safety Committees, ID 9913.
Thank you. May I have a second? Seconded by Deb Dawson. We had a public hearing on it today. Any questions? Okay, vote.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mori?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Dan Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries. Anything else, Amanda?
Nope, thank you.
Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee and Corman Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We last met on March 22nd, and we had an update from Jason on the Chief Sustainability Officer, and there was a budget and position transfer, as that person will be located rather than in administration. It seemed like that person was better suited to be able to do their work and aligned with the things that they're going to be doing in planning. And if Jason's still on here, and I might ask him for an update when I finish this, if he knows anything else about the officer or the chief sustainability officer. What was on the agenda tonight, we had the acceptance of the snowmobile grant, which is a pass-through. And we had a presentation regarding the draft Tompkins County Hazard Mitigation Plan. And we also talked about a proposed policy on the county forest. And that was a very robust conversation. We'll be talking more about that probably this month or next month. And anything else, Deborah, I missed?
No, ma'am, you got it all.
Thank you. Jason, is there any other update on the sustainability officer?
We don't have anything new to update. I think the period for applications is still open for another week. So,
okay.
You know, I don't even know how many folks have applied at this point.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Ann? Thank you very much. Moving on. Budget Capital Personnel Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a meeting next Monday. The main thing we'll be discussing is the finalization of our committee goals for the year. We kind of got sidetracked, what with reimagining public safety and the federal stimulus, and it's been such an uneventful year. The event. Before we move on, I want to assure Leslie that no matter how discouraging Amanda tries to make it sound, GO is a great committee to start your legislative career on, because you will get a broad overview of everything the county does, get to know a lot of our staff and department heads, and have a really good time.
And the best legislator is the chair, so.
Thanks.
All right, before I leave, I will make sure I have a trophy for the best legislature award. So step up, Henry. Step up, Amanda. All right. Thank you, Deborah. And Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Garnison, Chair.
Yes, we still have not met yet. We will meet at the end of April. But we have a meeting. We have been active. We, in fact, are going to have a meeting next week about Juneteenth and have an exciting program for you that we'll figure out next week. Also, we're working on the historical days, heritage days. And in fact, the Asian Pacific Islander month is the month of May, which seems opportune. That's all I have.
Thank you, Henry. Questions? Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on
last met on March 25th. Our next meeting is April 22nd at 9:30. In our March 25th meeting, we had a lot of, we did the resolutions that you saw on the agenda tonight. We had a good report from, sort of a very robust report from Natalie Bernoski of the Workforce Development Board, and passed a resolution supporting the contract to analyze short-term rental data in the county. And we look forward to seeing that kind of data come through so we can see what kind of impact we have throughout the county by what kind of, how many units are being used by short-term rental providers. So that was a new step. And we voted on our goals. And if that's okay, I would like to just quickly read through what we voted on. Three main areas: housing, economic recovery from the pandemic, and transportation. For housing, to address housing vulnerability and especially help secure federal assistance for tenants and landlords. For the housing fund, secure legislative approval of the renewed partnership agreement. For the short-term rental market, review the analytics study and evaluate the impact on the housing market. To discuss countywide code enforcement, to analyze some opportunities and challenges there and what purposes that might serve. Mobile homes, we hope we can get into unique challenges with mobile home housing in the county. On the economic recovery, help understand the opportunities with the federal American Rescue Plan and coordinate with community partners. Identify needs and support targeted initiatives, especially in the areas of tourism, workforce, and childcare. And consult with IAED on its economic recovery plan. And finally, on transportation, with TCAT, engage on their facility planning and the renewed partnership agreement may or may not come up this year, but we sort of want to track that and make sure that that gets moved as appropriate. So those are the committee goals for the year. And if there are no questions, that's my report.
Thank you, Martha. Questions, Dan Klein?
Martha, is there going to be something on the next AGD committee agenda about the heritage area?
Yes. Somebody from, I believe, the National Park Service. There is a proposal. I guess there's, you're following it. You want to update? You want to describe that briefly? Because
it's just a proposal to make a Finger Lakes heritage area. It's kind of like a national park without a park. I'm really excited about the idea, so I just wanted to keep a little track of how it's progressing.
And there's a public comment period, which ends in June. So we will probably bring something forward so that we can officially support designation of the Finger Lakes as a national heritage area. It means some interesting funding opportunities, and it's all good. And the planning department is interested in supporting it. Thanks for bringing that up, Dan.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Questions to Martha. Leslie.
Hi, Martha. Quick question. When you were talking about countywide code enforcement, is this being predicated Green Building Code for Town and City of Ithaca? Is it broader than that? What do you think about that?
It's something that's been discussed off and on for a while. It has come up with respect to health and safety for very, very low, especially very low-income housing, discussed by the Human Services Coalition, and discussed. It was brought up at the Planning Advisory Board in, I think, February by C.J. Randall from the town of Lansing. Noting that a lot of the code enforcement officials in the county are part-time, many retiring, so there may be some opportunities to consolidate offices, but even further to sort of professionalize more and bring it into a more consistent operation. Especially people are looking at it related to the, not necessarily the city and town's new energy code, but the state's initiative on a stretch energy code that is likely to come out of the CLCPA. the state's climate action bill. So CJ has done a good deal of research on it, and there have been a couple of counties that have done studies on it, and she sent me that information. So we thought we would take a look at it, and just kind of it's one of those initiatives that would take a while to really act, you know, to actually get going, but I wanted to have a conversation about it this year.
All right. Thank you. Downtown Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Downtown Facilities has not met since the last ledge meeting. We will be meeting this Thursday at 3 o'clock on this same channel. And hopefully we'll have some updates on progress on other facility areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. I will be sure to tune into this channel. Any questions for Dave? Okay. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Leslyn. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting on April 15th, so a week from Thursday at 3 o'clock. We have had a very busy March, as everybody is aware. We were successful in passing a reimagining public safety resolution with some very ambitious goals stated in it, and now the work begins of making it real. We will be bringing the first of, I think, many resolutions to the April 15th meeting, which is the resolution we started talking about concerning creation of a community justice center. This is to be formed in collaboration with the City of Ithaca as the entity that will be providing tracking and coordination of the different efforts in both the city plan and the county plan that are joint. Other than that, I just had a couple things to report. The jail population is at 46, which is quite a bit higher than we've seen in recent months. I believe that's due to the fact that the state has not yet quite started taking state-ready inmates. So our jail is holding a greater population than it has in the past. The state has indicated they're going to be doing that starting in April. So we should see those numbers begin to go down a bit. The only other thing I wanted to just let the legislators know is that I had a conversation with Dick Costello, who you may recall came in and spoke to us regarding amending our rules regarding rifle hunting. And I had reached out to him to find out if there had been a successful hunting season and whether there were any incidents reported locally or to the state. And he was aware of none, which I would say is good news that seems to have all occurred safely this year. I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Rich. Henry Granison, question.
Yeah, Rich, about the last one. I assume the governor has not proposed that we change our laws yet on the gun rifle hunting?
No, that went into effect this year.
Oh.
I can't remember. I think it's a 2-year period where we will see how it goes, and then we're going to have to act again to either make it permanent or rescind it.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you how are you going to combine the status of the Community Justice Center with the city? Will we consider a resolution before they will, or how will that work?
I would imagine, as with our reimagining public safety resolutions, we're going to work to try to make them aligned. The main issue in each one of them is the budget commitment, and certainly Jason is working with the city his city counterparts to make sure those numbers line up. I also anticipate we're going to have more information probably by April 15th, I hope, on greater detail on where the Community Justice Center will be located, how it'll be housed, and maybe some more on just general operation. But Jason, I don't mean to put you on the spot too much, but I'm sure those questions will come up on the 15th.
Yes, I think you hit it off. I know we're trying to set up a meeting, I think, with you and Henry as well as Leslie, to kind of talk a little bit about next steps and I've had some preliminary conversations with the city today, so we'll bring that information to the table when we meet next week. Our goal is to have something for you to talk about and act on at the Public Safety Committee meeting next Thursday. So it's aggressive, but we think we want to try to advance something forward rather than wait another month.
Yeah, I certainly think it's important that we move, that we need to demonstrate to the community that we are taking action here. So thank you.
I just assume we've heard nothing from the governor's office regarding our filing of the reimagining public safety resolution. Did we?
I'm not aware of the governor offering us a lot of money yet, but it could happen.
We haven't heard much from the governor in a few weeks, so.
his budget director would probably.
We did get a we did submit everything via email through the email that they provided, and we did get a confirmation email that it was received.
Oh, okay.
All right. Martha, you have a question.
Account has a lot of communication from him these days. I just wanted to thank Rich for leading us through that whole evaluation, the whole discussion, many extra questions and processes to answer and cats to herd, I will say. It was a lot to handle, and Rich, he really did a very effective and level-headed job of sort of accepting all incoming and helping us through it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for saying that, Martha. It certainly, I was happy to do it because I think this is really an important project for our community. I think we could make a real difference here. So thanks.
All right. Thank you. Health and Human Services, I know we usually take a break, but I'm trying to push us through to be done. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Get ready. This is a very long report, so I hope you're
through that screen tonight.
Okay. We will be welcoming Leslie to the Health and Human Services Committee, and we already have some liaison appointments lined up for her. Our next HHS meeting will be April 19th at 1 p.m. And that is it.
Questions for Shauna? All right, Leslie, you've been welcome to your two committees. Let's take up the minutes of the previous meeting. The March 16th minutes, moved by Ann Corman, seconded by Shauna Black. Any changes, corrections to the minutes? Okay, let's vote on the minutes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Did I vote on the last minutes?
Yes, you can.
Then yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes. Sorry.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, carried. May I have a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel matters related to a particular person, moved by Shauna Black, seconded by Henry Granison. We do not intend to take any action in executive session and will adjourn when we get out of executive session. All in favor of going into executive session?
Dave McKenna.
She's calling your names.
Dave McKenna.
Yes.
Glenn Morey. Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler? Yes. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Qualified yes.
Henry Granison?
Unqualified yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 no.
Thank you. Rick, we don't need you to stay, I don't believe. Have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good evening, everybody.